Blog Talk Radio.
Dear Jenny, this evening I had some fun with a few of my Dhamma brothers. During the sitting at about 3 p.m., something very heavy and cold landed on my arm. I opened my eyes in surprise, and I got even more surprised to discover that the culprit was a regular-looking fly. It continued to crawl across my bald head, face, and arms through the sitting, and I was totally amazed at how heavy it seemed to be. To myself, I named the different body sensations I was experiencing at the time: heat sensations, sound sensations, fly sensations, very new to me, and several more. Immediately after the sitting, everyone started complaining at the same time about the fly. There was actually only one fly in the group room. As it turns out, one fly had terrorized 8 hardened prisoners for a whole hour. Even though we didn't kill it, we spoke of several things which could be done to it. We then started wondering about how a fly lands on a ceiling. Have you ever looked up on a ceiling and seen a fly perched upside down? How did it land there? Did it fly upside down in order to get there? We discussed fly issues for over 10 minutes. Afterwards, we began to question our own states of mind for wondering so much and taking the fly so seriously. We still couldn't figure out how flies land on ceilings. Your friend, OB. Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you for so much for listening to the show this morning. I am speaking about an incredible issue this morning, meditation in prison. And my special guest this morning is Jenny Phillips. She holds a doctorate in cultural anthropology. She's a filmmaker, writer, and psychotherapist. Over the past 10 years, she has worked with prisoners in state and county prisons, teaching courses on emotional literacy skills and meditation. In 1999, she first visited Donaldson Correctional Facility, a maximum security prison in Alabama. Through her initiative, a Vipassana meditation program was established there in 2002. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm just awed by the work of the Dhamma brothers.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you.
So you are already involved in psychotherapy. You were a psychiatric nurse. You were already on the path of helping people. What made you decide to create this film?
Well, what changed in my life, I think, way before the film was, I'm an old Peace Corps volunteer, and I also have worked with Eskimos in Labrador, and, you know, these were things I did when I was very young, and raising children and needing to be in my own community, I was really looking for a population that was desperately in need of help. And one day I realized that I lived near a prison and that I never had any curiosity about what went on behind the prison walls. In fact, I was really feeling great relief that they were in there and I was outside and didn't ever want to meet them. And for some reason, one day I did go in to be part of a program called Alternatives to Violence. And I was just a participant for over a weekend with a large group of prisoners. And I was just kind of bowled over. And I think in that first experience in prison, it changed the course of my life in the sense that I realized that I could be of some help here and that this was a very interesting population to work with in terms of the tremendous potential they have and the lack of services that they are receiving. And so that's how I first got into prison. And the whole Alabama story is, you know, it's a whole nother layer in which I'm happy to briefly describe if you'd like me to.
Oh, definitely. I want you to. Let me just tell real quick before you start going, but this is a correctional facility in Alabama. And there's a movie, The Dhamma Brothers, out. There's also a book. And you need to check out the website, dhammabrothers.com. That's D-H-A-M-M-A brothers.com. And there you can learn about the screenings and resources, learning more about the meditation and the practices. There are links outside the site. But Jenny Phillips, again, I'm speaking with Jenny Phillips. She's the filmmaker. And she was in Alabama in what they called the Bible Belt. And there were prisoners doing meditation. There was lots of resistance that you learn about. What is this? Are you trying to teach them religion? Are you going against God? One of the favorite lines that Jenny and I talked about was, you know, relating Buddhism with witchcraft. So many misconceptions They were not trying to teach them religion. They were teaching them meditation. But go ahead, Jenny, go ahead, and you can sure do a better job than I can to explain what was going on.
No, that's great, what you said. And I had been teaching courses, a particular program called Houses of Healing, which is a 12-week treatment program, and I teach this program with groups of prisoners in Massachusetts in the state and county prison system. And I heard that this same program was very much part of a prison in Alabama called Donelson Correctional Facility, right outside of Birmingham. And I also heard that the prisoners were teaching one another the program. There's very little treatment going on inside that prison. It's the end of the line in the Alabama correctional system where they send prisoners that have really nowhere else to go, highest level of security. And yet here were these between 100 and 200 prisoners learning to meditate on their own, looking for a way out of their suffering, a way to live more peacefully. Most of them will not get out of that prison or will not get out for many, many years. They have life sentences and something called life without parole, which means there's no possibility of getting out. And yet they were trying to live more peaceful lives. So I called up the psychologist. He invited me to come down, and I went down, and I met with some of the men that you can see in the film today. And their stories were so stirring to me because they were very grateful for the meditation practice, but they wanted something that will carry them much deeper inside so that they could really address their deepest issues. And it's hard enough to address your deepest issues when you're out in the community. So many distractions. In prison, it's not necessarily a world of distractions as much as a place where you don't feel safe and you feel miserably unhappy and you want to look at those things, but you don't have a safe place to do it. So that began my efforts along with the Vipassana organization, which is worldwide, which teaches an intensive meditation practice in which you meditate for 100 hours under the strict guidance and structure of the program and the teachers. And over time, we made arrangements with the Department of Corrections in Alabama to bring that program to Donelson, and in 2002 had the first 10-day Vipassana program. And I was there, and I was so bowled over by the beauty and the spirituality in the midst of the confusion and despair and violence of the prison that I decided to make the film. And we started shooting the film in the spring of 2002.
Well, the interesting thing I also mentioned to you before we started the show is that it was kind of meditative for me to watch the film. Some of the audience may know, I've mentioned before, I was raised as a Buddhist from probably the age of 6 to about 18 or 19. And for me, it's not a far-fetched thing, the idea of meditation. It's not that word doesn't sound foreign to me, but for many people, it may sound very foreign. Maybe if you're practicing Islam, or if you're practicing Christianity, or if you're Judaism, meditation, Buddhism, what is that? You know, that's something over there. But for me, I remember as a child chanting for hours at a time. Right now, I probably can only chant for about 30 minutes. My focus is not that strong. But one of the things it did do for me was the focus, was the introspection. And one of the things in the film, in Jenny's film, that talks about at the prisoners and also the officers, the police officers and the warden, the people in the prison, they may have never been taught about or been able to have a quiet space in life. So as Jenny mentioned earlier, you know, even outside of prison, it's hard to balance your life and, you know, figure out your problems and things of that nature. But you're inside this prison. Inside the prison, they talked about gangs in the prison, prostitution in the prison, gambling in the prison, drugs in the prison. All these things are going on inside the prison. You know, people are there because of these things, but they're still going on. And trying to find some quiet places is just probably near impossible. So this program is so wonderful. Allowing them to this quiet space. And what happens is it's a 10-day program. They're isolated from the rest of the prisoners. And the teachers went and lived in the prison. Now, Jenny, that really was like, wow. I was like, ooh, could I live in a prison tent for 10 days with people who might have murdered people or, you know, killed people or these things? And, like, all these feelings were brought up for me. What did the teachers say to you with that idea? I know in the film they talked about their feelings.
Well, the two teachers, Jonathan and Bruce, were terrified of the prisoners, and people kept saying, you know, they may look like nice guys, but they can kill you in a minute. But interestingly enough, the prisoners were terrified at the teachers. They thought, who are these wacky guys that want to come in and live inside of a prison with us? What are they going to do to us? How are they going to hurt us? So there was a feeling of mutual suspicion and fear that you could cut with a knife in the beginning, and then everybody relaxed very, very quickly, and everybody trusted one another. And there was a tremendous sense of safety that you do not get when you're a prisoner. In that area where the meditation center was set up, where the men lived for 11 days, they began to their fears dropped away, and they began to open up to the teachers. Normally on a Vipassana course, you cannot chit-chat with one another, and you only talk with the teacher about serious matters of learning the skills of the practice. But the teachers relaxed some of those rules because they realized this is a very unusual group that's doing the sitting, and that when they would ask them a question like, where'd you get your T-shirt, or what kind of shoes are those, the teachers would speak with them about it because they really wanted them to see them as safe people that they could speak with. And as they felt safer and safer, then they began to be able to muster the courage and the strength that it takes to do 100 hours of meditation.
Well, I want to read a little bit another letter. This is from Omar Rahman. And one of the issues, again, going back to, were you teaching them a religion? You know, the program was actually shut down, Jenny. They wanted to stop the program because the other religious practices were threatened. Talk about that. How did that make you guys feel, the teachers? They were very upset, I know, in the film.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real crisis in the history of the program coming to Donaldson. It certainly made the story in the film much more interesting. At the time, everybody thought, you know, this is forever. Although Dr. Kavanaugh, who at that point was no longer he went from being the psychologist at Donaldson to being the director of treatment for the whole Alabama correctional system, and he basically said to me and the film crew and the Vipassana teachers, you know, just go away, and, you know, the time will come when we can go back again. And we waited until 2006. And the time did come, and the commissioner had changed. It was a new commissioner, a new warden, and Dr. Kavanaugh is so good at talking about this as treatment, because it really is treatment. It's much more than treatment in a lot of ways, but basically it's a treatment program that really works. And so we were allowed to go back in again. And that, for me, was the most moving moment of all of this, was walking back in behind the cameras and the teachers, and the men were standing there waiting. And that's what prisoners do, is they wait. That's the only thing they really can do. And as we walked down the hallway and they were all waiting there in a line, they just stood leaning against the wall, and they didn't move towards us. And later on I really thought about that, and I realized as a prisoner you can't run towards somebody. You've got to wait. You've got to be rather passive. But the moment of, I'm sure you must have noticed that, Joy, the feeling in the hallway as the teachers met the Vipassana prisoner students, it was an amazing moment.
I think what I something unseen was just the energy. If somehow you could take a picture of the air, I felt that there was probably this like glowing energy back and forth between the teachers and their smiles, just coming from their spirits, because the prisoners were so happy. Again, like you said, they couldn't run. They were all just standing on the wall, straight line. I mean, I'm imagining if they probably tried to move, then the guards would have stopped them, but there was still this beauty and love that was, to me, if somehow you could take a picture of the air. It was just going back and forth, and the teachers, you know, were near tears. I myself was so happy that they were allowed to go back. I'm not even there, but I'm happy, you know, watching the film, like, yay, they got back in, you know. And then one of the teachers said, you know, we're probably the only two men trying to get into the prison. Everybody else is trying to get out of the prison.
You guys want to get out. We wanted to get back in again.
Really, exactly.
True.
Exactly.
And the letters, I think, I received over 200 letters, probably 300, from the men over the years of the shutdown and the reopening. And the letters really reflect the depth of their practices. They weren't just attached to the teachers because the mm-hmm. teachers were loving figures that came in to be with them. They were attached to themselves and their realizations and their spirituality and their freedom from a lot of the fear and misery that they had felt before, and that kept them going over those years of shutdown when they had to meet secretly so that they could meditate together.
Yeah, let me just explain to the audience again, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with filmmaker Jenny Phillips. She is the director and producer of The Dhamma Brothers. This is a program that was taken into a prison in Alabama where they meditated for 10 days. They had to follow certain precepts. They could not talk. They could not have any sexual activity. They also couldn't practice any other religions. Someone had asked about could they pray, and they were really just trying to help them clear their minds and become more aware of themselves and their emotions. And they lived all together in this gym in the prison. And afterwards, some of the things that the prisoners talked about, he said that he had felt always felt justified about all the things that he had done, but the meditation helped him see otherwise. One of the prisoners had lost a daughter very young. She had fallen in a playground, and he had never really dealt with those feelings of his daughter's death. And the meditation brought up those feelings, and at first he was trying to push them down, but he finally allowed the feelings to rise up in him, and he was able to kind of close that chapter in his life. I want to read just a letter from one of the Dhamma brothers, Omar Rahman. I'm not going to read the whole letter, but just a small part of it. Because of Vipassana, I now see dimensions of Islam in ways I hadn't before. One example is metta. I was blown away by the practice of feeling others, of caring about the suffering of others, and caring about the happiness of others. The idea of being able to enlarge this capacity within myself through practice had eluded me. What was so startling about it to me was that I'd been reading year in, year out, the same thing in the Quranic studies and studies on the teachings and practices of Prophet Muhammad. Case in point, there is a verse in the Quran that describes a sincere Muslim. It includes all the required religious practices. However, these practices are mentioned after it is stated how important it is to care about the orphan, the indigent, or the homeless people who are suffering. Throughout the Quran, caring about those who are suffering is tied to identity. So while being taught metta, I said to myself, whoa, your book has been telling you this for years, Omar, but you are just now getting it. Then there is the statement by Prophet Muhammad that a good Muslim desires for others what he desires for himself, which echoed in my mind when I was sharing my love, my peace, and my happiness with all beings. There was another time when a man asked Prophet Muhammad who among them was the best Muslim. He answered, the best of you are those who are most kind to their wives, not most knowledgeable, mind you, nor most perfect in prayer or other religious acts, but who express the most kindness. What he was saying didn't fully touch me until Vipassana increased my awareness of the value of loving kindness. One night during the Vipassana course, before I fell asleep, I said to myself, Omar, Buddha has made you a better Muslim. Wow. If you're listening today, again, you could be practicing Islam, you could be practicing Christianity, you could be Jew, you could be practicing another form of Buddhism, but this program may take you to another level. I want to mention the website for the film is the dhammabrothers.org. And also
.com.
You can learn, I'm sorry,
.com.
Yes, .com. Sorry about that, Jenny. Mm-hmm. And also there's a website to learn more about the meditation, and which means to see things as they really are. And that's the meaning of the word. And but they couldn't talk. Now, that's one of the guys, he thought he was going to lose his mind. I forgot his name, but he was saying how he loves to talk all the time. And that was, like, his biggest fear. How could he survive 10 days not talking? But he was able to push through it, and he also felt he received such great benefits. Now, you as a filmmaker, what do you think you – and also, as I guess, a social worker and a therapist, and what benefits did you receive by doing this film, do you think?
Oh, by doing the film. I guess I really believed before, but now really understand on a fundamentally experiential level the importance of people being able to get in touch with their own stories. And often our stories, and I think this is so true for prisoners, our stories lead us into a sense of we're no good. You know, a lot of society's attitudes towards prisoners are very negative. And so they were really able to understand themselves experientially within in a way that's forgiving and can lead them into a more positive future. So that's why they can't talk to one another during the course, is they're really wrapped up within themselves in an experiential way. They're not, you know, if you could read a book about Buddhism, you could read 1,000 books about Buddhism and you still wouldn't know
mm-hmm.
anything until you really
yeah.
experienced it. And for me, it's meditation's been the same thing. I mean, just personally, learning to be a meditator and also now a Vipassana meditator. I used to read about these things and be afraid to try them. And I think being associated with this whole project has allowed me to have a bit more courage, as I observe other people who have so much more courage than I have. They're real role models and teachers in a way, which is why I wanted to make the film, because I thought after witnessing this, I wanted these men, the Dhamma brothers, to be teachers for others. And then at times I thought, that's ridiculous. How can a prisoner teach us non-prisoners? But I realized it, because of the reaction to the film around the world, I realized that these guys have become role models for all of us in learning to take our own journeys.
Well, you know, people are going to say, why should they be allowed to do Vipassana? I mean, they're in prison, they kill people, they hurt people. Why should we care about them? I mean, why should they get any kind of special attention? And they did these, you know, horrible acts to human beings. I mean, what would your answer be?
Well, first of all, I would say, you know, in a non-humanitarian answer, that 97-98% of prisoners are going to be back in our neighborhoods and streets at some point. And wouldn't it be better if they learned how to manage their emotions more mindfully, with greater awareness and capability? But my other answer is more humanitarian, which is also, do we benefit from preserving and even accentuating the misery of a large sector of our population, 2.5 million prisoners? Do we benefit from their misery and their inability to manage themselves? You know, how do we gain from that? And then you see things like Abu Ghraib, or just, you know, terrible things happening in other parts of the world that are under our control. And I wasn't surprised by that, you know. I mean, I think, you know, we just have to deal with the that potential that we all carry within ourselves to inflict suffering on other people. And I just think that if we learn to heal that sector of our population, it promotes all of our healing as a nation, as a people.
Well, one of the, also another very powerful moment for me in the film is there was a young man, he was head of a gang, and actually after doing the Vipassana training, he left the gang, and he was the leader. And he unfortunately had gotten transferred to another prison. I forgot, Jenny, do you remember which guy that
oh,
was?
Oh, yeah, no, that's brothers? Edward Johnson.
Edward Johnson,
and,
okay.
Yeah, and Edward Johnson was a member of a gang, and actually in the very first Vipassana program there was a member of the opposing gang. You know, they were big, they were both big guys in those two opposing groups, and
mm-hmm.
they went in there together, and all the officers were saying, they're never going to make it. And Edward dropped out of the gang and took a lot of flack and at times lost it and lost his way and then got back on the pathway again. And he's now worked himself down through the system to the point that he's now in a minimum security prison, in which he's doing outside work in the streets, getting ready for his release. And he has really put himself together in a way that the warden in one of the prisons he's been in actually wrote a letter to the parole board recommending, basically saying, we need this young man back in our streets so that he can work with young people, because he's made such great progress within himself. And I think Edward would agree that Vipassana was a huge part of this transformation for himself.
Yes, he was one. He was a gentleman who had lost his daughter when she was young in the playground.
Yeah.
So he was the one I mentioned earlier and dealing with those feelings. We have about 4 minutes left. I want to read a letter from Grady. He was a very interesting character in the film. It says, "Dear Jenny, I know it's been a long time since you heard from me. I've meant to write several times, and I don't know why I haven't. I hope you know, just because I haven't written doesn't mean that you are forgotten, because that could never happen. In the time that you haven't heard from me, life and death has gone on. I've had the rest of my family members pass away. My daughter, Brandy, in Mobile, was murdered. I know how it feels on both sides now. One thing it did do was confirm my beliefs on capital punishment and excessive stays in prisons. I haven't been, nor am I now, angry with the man that did it. So many people are getting killed every day. It's a wonder that it hasn't touched myself or a loved one before now. When it happened, I was raw inside for a week or so, and as it eased, I was able to talk about it. So I'm okay. As to more pleasant things, still meditating, it really helped me to stay calm through all that has happened, so I'm surviving." He, for those of you who just heard and maybe didn't hear clearly, Brandy is his daughter, and she was murdered. Grady himself is in prison for murder that he actually physically didn't do, but he witnessed. He was there as part of a group of individuals. So now somebody murdered his daughter, but through Vipassana, he's saying that he was able to deal with those feelings. And I think, as Jenny said in the beginning of the show, even if you're not in prison, it's hard to deal with your feelings. You may push them down, you may push them aside, you may take them out on other people. And this is Vipassana is a path that you might want to look into to help you get in touch with your feelings. And this is a group of men, and men in general don't deal with their feelings, don't even know how to process, and may not even know what they are. What is it? What is this thing that's happening inside my body? So Vipassana may be a path that you might want to look into. I want to thank you so much, Jenny, for coming on the show today.
This is wonderful. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
I want to wish you much success with the film. And again, if you're listening to the show this morning, thedhammabrothers.com is the website. I just finished speaking with Jenny Phillips. She's a filmmaker, social worker, human being extraordinaire by just creating the film, I think. So you have a wonderful Saturday, Jenny.
You too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and you can follow me on twitter.com/Joy Keyes. You can become a fan of the show. Just look us up on Facebook. They call liking now, so fan or like. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm going to be doing a second half talking about the Sudan 365 with singer Al Sarah. There's so much violence going on in the world, not just in prisons, but all across the globe. So stay tuned for the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. You can call 646-929-0368 to listen to the show and ask a question. And I hope to see you in a couple minutes or next Saturday. I'll be speaking about bipolar issues and also about relationship issues. That's next Saturday on the 9th at 11 a.m. Eastern. Thank you so much.